to turn to Genesis chapter 22. There's, again, this is Abraham and offering up his son Isaac, probably the best known episode in Abraham's life. And certainly there's a great amount to be gleaned from this episode in the life of Abraham. There's much biblical truth to be found here, many life lessons that we can learn. There's much about God. We see the faithfulness of God. We touched upon it this morning, the all-wise providence of God, seen in the opening words, and it came to pass after these things. We see God in relation to His people. We see God's love for His people, God's provision for His people. We see a picture or an illustration of God's willingness to give His Son, Christ's willingness, and Isaac to lay down his wife's life. There are lessons about the trials of life. There are lessons on how to persevere through those trials, and we basically touched upon that this morning. There are lessons about faith, which we touched upon this morning, and obedience to God in the face of trials. There are lessons about true surrender to the Lord. So the emphasis can be placed in a number of places. We place the emphasis this morning on verse 8, God will. God will. And those two words pretty much summarize the faith of Abraham. Tonight we want to center our thoughts upon verse 5. And Abraham said unto his young men, abide ye here with the ass, and I and the lad will go yonder and worship and come again to you. So we want to look at this word, this thought of worship. We've in the past used Abraham as an illustration of worship. We see here upon arriving at Mount Moriah, which would be the God-ordained place where Abraham was to offer up Isaac as a burnt offering. Abraham says to his two servants, abide ye here, and I and the lad will go yonder to worship and come again to you. That word worship reveals the spirit and attitude of Abraham at this time. It's also the first time the word occurs in the Bible. It's not the first recorded act of worship. Adam and Eve worshiped God. Abel worshiped God. Enoch worshiped God. Noah worshiped God. And there were others. But it is the first time the word occurs. Worship. There's a hermeneutical principle. Hermeneutics, of course, is the interpretation of scriptures, how to interpret scriptures. The principle of hermeneutics here is the principle of first mention. The principle of first mention. The idea when it comes to interpreting scriptures is that the first mention of a word or a doctrine in the Bible basically, not completely, determines the meaning throughout the rest of Scripture. For instance, Egypt is first mentioned in Genesis 12 and verse 10. And there it is presented in a negative light. And as a general rule, not every single time, but as a general rule, that is the way Egypt is presented throughout the Scriptures, in a negative light. So we have this word worship. It's the Hebrew word shaka. It simply means to bow down. The Old Testament idea of worship is the reverential awe of mind and body. The principal New Testament word for worship is proskuneo, meaning to reverence by prostration. Our English word worship comes from the Anglo-Saxon word worship. So it involves the feeling or the expression of the worth of God. Overall, to worship is to glory, to give God glory, honor, and submission, which is His due. We are to give what is due Him, which, of course, we cannot do 100% because we're limited. To worship is to have a reverential act of submission. There is no worship without submission. There is no worship without reverence. It is an act of reverential homage before God. In response to who He is, and it's always in accordance with His will. You can't just worship God any way you please. If you do, it ceases to be worship. It is the overflow of a grateful heart under a powerful sense of God's presence or God's favor. So the worship involves, of course, a vivid realization of who God is, a vivid realization and sense of His presence. There has to be agreement with God. You cannot worship and be in disagreement with God. There has to be conformity to God, a humility of spirit, love to God, faith in God, praise for God, thanksgiving, commitment, surrender to God. From all of that, true worship is life renewing. If it does not renew you, you haven't worshiped. It's that simple. It is life impacting. It's a life renewing, life impacting event. And we come here to verse 5, and we hear Abraham say, "I and the lad will go yonder and worship." And the whole account is a beautiful illustration of worship. And it provides the setting of worship. And that's what we want to speak upon. The setting of true worship. The actual act of worship in this portion of Scripture takes place upon Mount Moriah. And it was God's designated place for this particular time. So consider some events that took place prior to the actual act of worship. And in those events, we find the true spirit and the foundation of worship. No one accidentally worships God. Worship is something you do on purpose. Nor does anyone just turn on worship like with a switch. Doesn't work that way. Notice several things. First of all, there was a personal relationship with the Lord. Cannot be worship without this. In verses 1 and 2, we see God is speaking to Abraham and said unto him, Abraham, called him by name. From there was a personal contact and interaction between God and Abraham. God said, Abraham. In response, Abraham said, here I am. So there was a personal, on Abraham's part, there was a personal awareness of God. There was a personal response to God. This is prior to the actual act of worship. There has to be an interaction between you and God, between me and God, prior to the act of worship. Now this reveals several things. God spoke to Abraham. Abraham said, here I am. It reveals that God had the attention of Abraham. Prior to worship, God must have your attention. I'm talking days before worship, not just 2 minutes. God had the attention of Abraham. In Abraham's response, we see that Abraham was sensitive to God. He was sensitive to the voice of God. Behold, here I am. From this, we see that Abraham possessed a willingness, a readiness, a spirit of submission, and a desire to please God, and to further hear from God. All that has to take place before the actual act of worship. From Abraham's response to God, we see that he was available to God. Here I am. And he took his proper place before God. We see that his heart was affected and stirred by the voice of God. Before we come into this building, our hearts must be affected and stirred before we come in. Not saying they can't be if we don't do that prior to. But if we're intent to worship, our hearts already have to be stirred. All of this is necessary to the true act of worship. We see also there was a personal revelation from God in verse 2. God makes known to Abraham what he wants him to do. I want you to go to Moriah. And I will show you the place when you get there. But I want you to offer up your son, Isaac. His instruction to Abraham was contrary to natural feelings, contrary to natural affections, contrary to and unlike anything going on in the world. If we're going to, prior to worship, we have to rise above ourself and the world. This is absolutely necessary. There was also personal preparation. Verse 3, we see that before Abraham left for that place, he saddles his donkey, he gathers Isaac, he split the wood, took his knife, took a cord so that he could bind Isaac, and he took the means of starting a fire. In all of that, Abraham was preparing. He was making arrangement. He was getting ready to leave where he was and to go to the place where God had appointed to do what God told him to do. In the worship of God, there must be preparation to be in the place that God would have us. Abraham's preparation, you'll notice, corresponded to what God would have him to do. Abraham, in his preparation, was focused upon the desires of God. Abraham's preparation was with the intent of obeying the Lord. Abraham's preparation no doubt involved great thought upon what he was about to do. As he was preparing his mule, I believe he did so with great thought upon what was at hand. As he split the wood, I believe he did so with great thought of what was at hand. All this is 3 days prior. As he gathered the wood, as he took his knife and the cord and the means of starting a fire, he did so with great thought of what was at hand. As he gathered Isaac, he did so with great thought. These things were not done mindlessly. And you do not prepare for worship mindlessly. Abraham was in deep thought and meditation upon God as he did all of these things. And I believe he thought much upon the goodness of God and the faithfulness of God toward him. I believe his mind is absorbed with God and the matter that was before him. Nothing else really mattered. Again, if God tells you to take your child and offer him on an altar of sacrifice, that's going to consume your mind. And this is what was consuming the mind of Abraham. There must be a consumption with God, an absorption, and a focus upon God. And everything Abraham was preparing, in all of his preparation, he was rising above self. No one would choose to do this. He was rising above self-interest and self-ways and concerns. He's rising above all of his plans. This is not in the plans of Abraham. He has overcome all his fleshly inclinations in all preparation to worship God, and in the act of worship itself, these things must take place. We see also there was obedience in verse 3, and went unto the place which God had told him. Where was Abraham's mind? Where was Abraham's heart as he left his residence that morning? It was upon God, upon what God had told him to do. He went into the place of which God had told him. I don't believe that Abraham left his residence that morning. It's hard to understand, but I don't believe he left with a feeling of dread. I don't believe that he was trying to escape in any way. I believe he rose that morning and left, did all the preparations very eagerly. And I believe he felt privileged and blessed of God. And I believe his heart was overflowing with thanksgiving. That's all part of the preparation of worship. We need to make personal examination. How do we leave our residence to go to the place where God has appointed for worship? In what spirit do we leave? The journey took 3 days. 3 days to get to the place, the God-ordained place, at this time for Abraham to worship. How long or how far are you willing to travel to worship the Lord? 3 days. 3 day journey. People today won't drive an hour. It's too far. Abraham, has he made this journey, this 3 days? I believe in that 3 days, Abraham was progressing in his awareness of God. I believe he was becoming more and more aware of God. I believe he was progressing in his sensitivity toward God, his willingness, his readiness to do what God would have him to do, his submission to God, his desire for God, his intent and purpose to do what God would have him to do. He's progressing in his meditation and in his recall of God's goodness, God's faithfulness. 3 days he's overcoming fleshly inclinations. How do you know that? Well, he wouldn't have made the 3 day journey if he hadn't. He would have stopped. He would have turned around. But for 3 days he overcame fleshly inclinations. He was progressing toward the place of worship. He was progressing toward the act of worship. He was advancing further. Think about it. 3 days. He's advancing further away from the cares of home. Home is now 3 days in the background. And he's getting closer to the place of worship. Worship involves a progression of heart and soul prior to the worship. There was personal faith. We spoke upon that this morning. During that 3 day journey, Abraham believed and trusted God. He believed that God would do what he said he would and do what only God can do. Verse 4, they arrive at the God-appointed place. And Abraham, who's been absorbed with God, is still absorbed with God, still trusting God. It's clearly brought out in his words to his young men in verse 5 again. I and the lad will go yonder and worship and come again to you. It's also evident from his response to Isaac. Verse 8, God will provide himself a lamb. I believe Abraham's faith has been increasing since he left his residence 3 days ago. And it continued to increase up to the point of verse 10, where you see Abraham with uplifted knife. For 3 days, Abraham's heart is being more and more moved and stirred. And as we get closer to the day of worship, that ought to be the case. Our hearts ought to be being stirred. Sunday is almost here. It ought to be a stirring. In all worship to God, there must not only be the exercise of faith, there must be the progression of faith. There was a coming apart unto God. Verse 3, he had to leave his residence. And coming to verse 4, they're now 3 days removed from their residence. And again, we need to make personal examination. How far are we removed from out there when we come in here? That's a real problem today because of all the connectivity. But I don't believe you can worship God connected to out there. You have to leave that when you come in here. If you're going to worship, truly worship. After 3 days, we read that Abraham lifted up his eyes and saw the place afar off. In other words, God said, see that mountain? That's the place, Abraham. But they're still afar off. Still afar off from the God-ordained place. And then we come to verse 5. Still afar off from Mount Moriah. We don't know how far. Obviously, you could see the mountain, but you can see a mountain for a long time. And he says, abide ye, notice that word, here. Abide ye here, and I and the lad, Isaac, will go, notice the next word, yonder. Afar off. And worship. Here and yonder. Two very important words in that verse. But Abraham and Isaac left the two servants and the mules. There was a leaving of worldly associations to go to that place. How far removed are we from worldly associations when we come here? Again, here and yonder. That's two separate places, by the way. Here and yonder are not the same place. Here and yonder are two separate places. And when it comes to worship, they must be kept separate. You can't bring the here into the yonder. When it comes to worship, like Abraham, the worshiper is to say to all his home cares and business and worldly affairs, you stay here, and I'm going yonder to worship. There has to be a disconnect in order to worship. In verse 6, and they, Abraham and Isaac, went both of them together. But notice verse 6, and Abraham took the wood of the burnt offering, laid it upon Isaac his son, and he took the fire in his hand and a knife, and they both went to worship. They only took what they needed to do what God told them to do. You only need to worship. You only bring into the house of God what you need to worship. I believe that's the Word of God. That's what we bring. Don't need anything else. That's all they did, was bring what God told them, what, so that they could do what God told them to do. All this is prior to the act of worship. Worship has been greatly cheapened today. Most of what is called worship is anything but. And we're not going to preach upon that, but everything we've mentioned up to this point must continue throughout the act of worship as well. In the act of worship, there was a renunciation of self. There was prior to also. And there was a realization that God is worthy of all. We see that in verses 9 and 10. There was a desire, there was a willingness to let go. Abraham was willing to let go of Isaac. Willing to give it all to God. That is necessary in worship. Isaac is not what God wanted. You miss the whole point if you think that Isaac is what God wanted. Isaac is not what God wanted. God wanted Abraham's heart. And that's what God wants in all worship. Our hearts. And when Abraham built that altar, and when Abraham bound his son, laid his son upon that altar, and then with uplifted knife, it was then that God said, Abraham, Abraham. He had his heart. He had it before, but he has it more now. Abraham had faith enough to lay down Isaac. And in all true worship, there is a laying down before God. Someone said one time, I don't know who it was, he is no fool who gives what he cannot keep to gain what he cannot lose. You think about that. He is no fool who gives what he cannot keep. There isn't anything in this life that you can keep to gain what he cannot lose. And yet, most professing children of God spend their lives striving to keep what they cannot keep. And therefore they lose what they could have gained. How often God's people strive, they'll fight hard to keep what they can't keep. And lose sight of what they can't lose. There was also an open ear and a ready response to God's voice. Verse 11. Just as Abraham was about to slay his son Isaac, God speaks directly to Abraham from heaven. I believe that Abraham was expecting to hear from God. And I believe in all worship you ought to expect to hear from God. And when God spoke, Abraham heard. He not only heard, but he recognized that voice. He knew it was God. And he not only heard and recognized the voice, but he responded to the voice of God in a positive way. Again, he said, here am I. In all true worship, there's a recognition of God. There's a hearing of his voice. And there is a response, a positive response to him. There was also the personal experience of God's provision. Abraham in full assurance had told Isaac, God will provide himself a lamb. And Abraham experiences that in verse 13. And Abraham lifted up his eyes and looked, and behold, behind him, there it was, caught in the thicket. There was the miraculous provision of God. But notice in verse 13, not only did he see, but it says Abraham went and took the ram. He not only saw and took God's provision, but he also benefited from it by using it for what God would have him use it for. He took the ram, and then it says, and offered him, the God-provided lamb, up for a burnt offering. Abraham, don't you think Abraham enjoyed God's provision that day? There's enjoyment in true worship. There's the provision of God in true worship. It says that he offered him up for a burnt offering in the stead of his son. Oh, what joy that filled Abraham's heart. You see, Abraham at that moment was enjoying God's best for him. That's what happens when you worship the Lord. And oh, what a wonderful time they had, Abraham and Isaac, enjoying God's provision. I can hear Isaac saying, Dad, it's just like you said it would be. God will provide himself. He saw, he experienced, he received, and put to use what only God could do. Verse 14, this has an overwhelming effect or overwhelming impact upon Abraham. And Abraham called the name of the place Jehovah Jireh, as is said to this day in the mount of the Lord, it shall be seen. And I believe Abraham is now even closer to God than he was 3 days ago. I can't say that I've ever been as close to God as Abraham was 3 days prior. But I believe by the time you get to verse 14, Abraham's even closer. And that's what happens when you worship God. You get closer. Worship isn't a departure from God. Worship is getting closer to the Lord. And then in verses 15 through 18, there's further assurance from God. Again, the angel of the Lord called on Abraham out of heaven a second time. And then he just reminds him of how God would bless Abraham. So there was further assurance. And when we truly worship, there's further assurance from God. And then verse 19 in closing. So Abraham returned unto his young men. I don't know how long they've been gone. Might have been days. I don't know. And they rose up and went together to Beersheba. And Abraham dwelt at Beersheba. So Abraham returned unto his young men. So as Abraham and Isaac leave that God-appointed place of worship. As they're making their way back to the two servants, what do you think was upon their minds? What happened? That worship was upon their minds. What had just transpired? What do you think they talked about? There weren't sporting events in those days, I'm sure. Maybe there was. But I guarantee you they weren't talking about that. And I guarantee you they weren't talking about the weather. They were talking about what they just experienced. We've all been guilty. But it's discouraging. The second a church service is over, people are talking about the world. About the basketball game, the football game, whatever. They haven't worshiped. They've gone through the motions. They haven't worshiped. Because worship makes an impact. I believe that Abraham and Isaac, as they came down that mountain, that's what was on their mind, was what had just transpired. And that's what they talked about. And then we read, and they rose up and went together to Beersheba. 3 days back. What do you think was upon their minds for that 3 days? What they had just experienced. What do you think was the topic of their conversation for 3 days? What had just transpired. How wonderful it would be if after a worship service, God's people would talk about that until the next worship service. But you're doing good to get 3 minutes for most people today. They talk about the service for 3 minutes. That's pretty spiritual in today's standard. Because most, a few seconds after, they're already onto the next thing. One of the greatest plagues of modern day Christendom is that when worship service is over, it's over. It's one of the greatest plagues of our life. Well, you give too much. We can't consume it all in an hour. It's not meant for an hour. It's meant for days. You don't get it. God help us. Worship is to have an impact upon our lives. Not for just a few minutes. But for days. We talk to our people we know that are lost. Tell them about church. Well, I wouldn't do that. It's because you haven't worshiped. If you truly worship, you'll tell others. You'll never convince me that Abraham and Isaac, that 3 days back, just talked about trivial things. I don't believe that. They talked about what had taken place. Oh, that God would help us to be always progressing toward the place of worship. If we talk about it, if we talk about a worship service, not about all the words the pastor mispronounced, not about what so-and-so was wearing, giving a critique of the service. You're not a church critic. You're to be a worshiper. If you want to be a critic, be a food critic. Not at church, at a restaurant. But if you truly worship, you simply talk about what the Lord did in your life. Because worship is individual. Yes, it's congregational, but it can't be congregational until the individuals of the congregation worship. We've said it many times. It's the subject of worship is a wonderful subject. The way God is worshiped today is very discouraging. When we look at our own worship, it's very depressing. We've come to a lot of church services. You'd be lying if you said you worship God in every one of them. In fact, I doubt that we have truly worshiped God in most of them. I mean truly worshiped the Lord. Because as soon as the service is over and you start talking about the worldly things, that's where your mind's been the whole hour. You haven't worshiped. Oh, that we would be a people of worship. Again, I preach this to myself more than anyone else. I think about worship a lot. I think about my own so-called worship. And it's discouraging. Because I wonder how many times I truly, truly worship the Lord. Just totally consumed with Him. Worship's a wonderful thing. And we are a privileged and blessed people to be called to worship God. And it's something we ought to progress toward. As soon as this service is over, we ought to be progressing toward Wednesday. We ought to begin preparation for Wednesday and how we live our life through the week has much to do with how we're going to worship come Wednesday. And then when Wednesday services are over, same thing. We ought to begin progressing toward that act of worship. We ought to be worshiping God every day. But there are special times of worship that God has ordained. And if you don't worship God during the week, you can't just roll in here and worship the Lord. It's not a switch that you can turn on and off. It's a progression. I'm thankful. I'm ashamed of my worship, but I'm thankful that I can worship God. Brother Larry, if you'd come and lead us in verse of song.